Kids Are Not Defective, Part 6, Holes. Today on the show, a troubled teen, a valedictorian, a carrot, a stick, a gold sticker, some marijuana, a pat on the head, a slap on the wrist. What do they all have in common?
I'm expressing with my full capabilities, and now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube.
Hey everybody, before we start, I'm proud to announce that SchoolSuckProject.com is an official sponsor of Liberty on Tour. That is Adam Miller and Pete Ayers project. I think they are getting ready to hit the road again in Marv at the end of this month. And I want to thank Debbie Harbison, who made that entire sponsorship possible with her donation. So that is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much, Debbie. And I also noticed that even though I was trying to sell a whole bunch of t-shirts at Porkfest, boy, I have quite a few left. And if you'd be interested in getting your hands on one before we actually can set up our store, email me at brett@schoolsucksproject.com, and I'll throw in a bumper sticker for $15 plus shipping. And if you're interested, I'll let you know what shipping is, and we can arrange something on PayPal, and then you can have one. They're pretty sharp. And, of course, I should thank Jason Osborne for making the purchase of those t-shirts possible. I'd like to get some money back to him. So it's a good-looking t-shirt, and it helps spread the, you know, awareness about the show. But think of him, too. He's really great. So, all right, let's get to it. I wanted to start today by reading something posted on the School Sucks Facebook page. This is really, really great, and I think you'll really enjoy this. It's actually the transcription of a speech. Title of the article is "Valedictorian Speaks Out Against Schooling in Graduation Speech." So I'm going to get right to it. It starts with a comment. The following speech was delivered by the top of the class student Erica Goldson during the graduation ceremony at Coxsackie Athens High School on June 25th, 2010. And it begins. Here I stand. There is a story of a young but earnest Zen student who approached his teacher and asked the master, "If I work very hard and diligently, how long will it take for me to find Zen?" The master thought about this, then replied, 10 years. The student then said, "But what if I work very, very hard and really apply myself to learn fast? How long then?" Replied the master, "Well, 20 years. "But what if I really, really work hard at it? How long then?" asked the student. 30 years, replied the master. "But I do not understand," said the disappointed student. "Each time I say that I will work harder, you say it will take me longer. Why do you say that?" Replied the master, "When you have one eye on the goal, you only have one eye on the path." This is the dilemma I've faced within the American education system. We are so focused on a goal, whether it be passing a test or graduating as first in the class. However, in this way, we do not really learn. We do whatever it takes to achieve our original objective. Some of you may be thinking, "Well, if you pass a test or become valedictorian, didn't you learn something?" Well, yes, you learned something, but not all that you could have. Perhaps you only learned how to memorize names, places, and dates to later on forget in order to clear your mind for the next test. School is not all that it can be. Right now, it is a place for most people to determine that their goal is to get out as soon as possible. I am now accomplishing that goal. I am graduating. I should look at this as a positive experience, especially being at the top of my class. However, in retrospect, I cannot say that I am any more intelligent than my peers. I can attest that I am only the best at doing what I am told and working the system. Yet here I stand, and I am supposed to be proud that I have completed this period of indoctrination. I will leave in the fall to go on to the next phase expected of me, in order to receive a paper document that certifies that I am capable of work. But I contest that I am a human being, a thinker, an adventurer, not a worker. A worker is someone who is trapped within repetition, a slave of the system set up before him. But now, I have successfully shown that I was the best slave. I did what I was told to the extreme. While others sat in class and doodled to later become great artists, I sat in class to take notes and become a great test taker. While others would come to class without their homework done because they were reading about an interest of theirs, I never missed an assignment. While others were creating music and writing lyrics, I decided to do extra credit, even though I never needed it. So I wonder, why did I even want this position? Sure, I earned it. But what will come of it? When I leave educational institutionalism, will I be successful or forever lost? I have no clue about what I want to do with my life. I have no interest because I saw every subject of study as work, and I excelled at every subject just for the purpose of excelling, not learning. And quite frankly, now I'm scared. John Taylor Gatto, a retired school teacher and activist critical of compulsory schooling, asserts, quote, "We could encourage the best qualities of youthfulness, curiosity, adventure, resilience, the capacity for surprising insight simply by being more flexible about time, texts, and tests, by introducing kids into truly competent adults, and by giving each student what autonomy he or she needs in order to take a risk every now and then. But we don't do that." End quote. Between these cinder block walls, we are all expected to be the same. We are trained to ace every standardized test, and those who deviate and see the light through a different lens are worthless to the scheme of public education, and therefore viewed with contempt. H.L. Mencken wrote in the American Mercury for April 1924 that the aim of public education is not to, quote, "fill the young of the species with knowledge and awaken their intelligence." Nothing could be further from the truth. The aim is simply to reduce as many individuals as possible to the same safe level, to breed and train a standardized citizenry, to put down dissent and originality. That is its aim in the United States, unquote. To illustrate this idea, doesn't it perturb you to learn about the idea of critical thinking? Is there really such a thing as uncritically thinking? To think is to process information in order to form an opinion. But if we are not critical when processing this information, are we really thinking? Or are we mindlessly accepting other opinions as truth? This was happening to me. And if it wasn't for the rare occurrence of an avant-garde 10th grade English teacher, Donna Bryan, who allowed me to open my mind and ask questions before accepting textbook doctrine, I would have been doomed. I am now enlightened, but my mind still feels disabled. I must retrain myself and constantly remember how insane this ostensibly sane place really is. And now here I am, in a world guided by fear, a world suppressing the uniqueness that lies inside each of us, a world where we can either acquiesce to the inhuman nonsense of corporatism and materialism or insist on change. We are not enlivened by an educational system that clandestinely sets us up for jobs that could be automated, for work that need not be done, for enslavement without fervency, for meaningful achievement. We have no choices in life when money is our motivational force. Our motivational force ought to be passion, but this is lost from the moment we step into a system that trains us rather than inspires us. We are more than robotic bookshelves conditioned to blurt out facts we are taught in school. We are all very special. Every human on this planet is so special. So aren't we all deserving of something better? Of using our minds for innovation, rather than memorization, for creativity rather than futile activity, for rumination rather than stagnation. We are not here to get a degree, then get a job, so we can consume industry-approved placation after placation. There is more and more still. The saddest part is that the majority of students don't have the opportunity to reflect as I did. The majority of students are put through the same brainwashing techniques in order to create a complacent labor force working in the interests of large corporations and secretive government. And worst of all, they are completely unaware of it. I will never be able to turn back these 18 years. I can't run away to another country with an education system meant to enlighten rather than condition. This part of my life is over, and I want to make sure that no other child will have his or her potential suppressed by powers meant to exploit and control. We are human beings. We are thinkers, dreamers, explorers, artists, writers, engineers. We are anything we want to be, but only if we have an education system that supports us rather than holds us down. A tree can grow, but only if its roots are given a healthy foundation. For those of you out there that must continue to sit in desks and yield to the authoritarian ideologies of instructors, do not be disheartened. You still have the opportunity to stand up, ask questions, be critical, and create your own perspective. Demand a setting that will provide you with intellectual capabilities that allow you to expand your mind instead of directing it. Demand that you be interested in class. Demand that the excuse you have to learn this for the test is not good enough for you. Education is an excellent tool if used properly. But focus more on learning rather than getting good grades. For those of you that work within the system that I am condemning, I do not mean to insult. I intend to motivate. You have the power to change the incompetencies of this system. I know that you did not become a teacher or an administrator to see your students bored. You cannot accept the authority of the governing bodies that tell you what to teach, how to teach, and that you will be punished if you do not comply. Our potential is at stake. For those of you that are now leaving this establishment, I say, do not forget what went on in these classrooms. Do not abandon those that come after you. We are the new future, and we are not going to let tradition stand. We will break down the walls of corruption to let a garden of knowledge grow throughout America. Once educated properly, we will have the power to do anything, and best of all, we will only use that power for good, for we will be cultivated and wise. We will not accept anything at face value. We will ask questions, and we will demand the truth. So here I stand. I am not standing here as valedictorian by myself. I was molded by my environment, by all of my peers who are sitting here watching me. It was all of you who truly made me the person I am today. It was all of you who were my competition, yet my backbone. In that way, we are all valedictorians. I am now supposed to say farewell to this institution, those who maintain it, and those who stand with me and behind me. But I hope this farewell is more of a see you later, when we are all working together to rear a pedagogic movement. But first, let's go get those pieces of paper that tell us we're smart enough to do so. The end. So, I have to say, I really am just so impressed by this speech, by this girl. And I have my fingers crossed that, you know, she'll get back to me and come on the show and talk about some of the things that led up to this presentation. But yeah, I'm very impressed by this. This is someone who could have so easily been robbed of the curiosity and the individuality and the courage that leads to giving a speech like this. Seduced by, you know, the school system into becoming a reward bot. I use that term as a reference to a book by Alfie Cohen called punished by rewards, where he talks about how all of the bargains and incentive plans and bribes that exist throughout our educational experience rob us of our intrinsic motivation, of our desire to follow our own interests, our own pursuits, punished by rewards. And those who are labeled by the school the best and the brightest usually receive the harshest punishments in this respect. The rest of us are punished by constraints, impositions, arbitrarily manufactured consequences. Because we can't all be this girl Erica, right? School is not just an all-day-long, endless carrot buffet. Some of us have to take the sticks. But whether you get, you know, the carrots or the sticks or some combination of both, those are the only two things being offered in this institution. And when you look at the personal costs, the cost to the students of a reward system like this, it really doesn't even matter which one you get. After reading that speech, I don't even know which one is better. But all of us, whether we're the valedictorian or the very bottom of the class, I think it's safe to say that we feel the emotions natural to any place or situation from which we cannot escape. Hopeless, powerless, frustrated, a lack of self-confidence, a lack of self-esteem, a lack of self-worth. Something empty that needs to be filled. Our behavior in school, good or bad, is managed like we are pets. Do this, get this. That's behaviorism. We've talked about it on the show before. We're trained to have no belief in our own minds, in our own decisions, our own personal power, no trust in our volition. Reason is nothing compared to obedience, compared to conformity. That's where all the immediate rewards are. Purpose, well, that will be assigned. The brilliant lights of personal interest, of personal desire, it's all nothing compared to your friggin' report card, your GPA, your class rank. That's school. Most people's parents are no better. But they're, you know, pressuring kids into sports, into extracurricular activities, helicoptering around them, getting together with other parents. Like they're all at the Westminster dog show. These environments produce these feelings. These feelings can lead to poor decisions. So let me pause there for a second and talk about the motivation behind not just this episode, but behind School Sucks Podcast. To be completely forthright, I have to think that it is partially motivated by, you know, the occasional feelings of isolation or alienation or frustration that I have felt watching familial or interpersonal relationships strained or broken by my focus on these pursuits, or my willingness to speak the obvious truth all of these people already know. So I do think about that, and it was important for me to go on record, for whatever it's worth, or for however many people it reaches, and I sincerely hope that ultimately it reaches a lot more people than it's reaching now. But really, really, I believe that the show and my work is motivated by an earnest desire to help young people avoid some of the mistakes that I made as an adolescent, and to realize many, many, many things that I didn't, and eventually put that knowledge into some kind of meaningful action. So on that that last point, helping people avoid the mistakes that I've made, I'm older now. I graduated from high school a long time ago, but I still remember what it feels like to be stuck in that trap of just intellectual and emotional retardation. And, you know, I understand the frustration and the hopelessness and the powerlessness and just the trudging through one day after the next that goes with that feeling. I remember it being especially awful in middle school, where there was just no light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, at least in high school, I could drive, I could get a job, I could have a girlfriend, but that was even worse in a way, when you felt like an adult and people still treated you like a little kid. So when I was between the ages of, I guess, 15 and we'll say 25, I made a lot of really, really poor choices. And they weren't entirely motivated by school. I mean, obviously family, peers, there's a lot of factors in why we do some of the negative or destructive things that we do. I was a troubled teen, as they're called. But this is what I learned. I just wanted to talk about it for a few minutes, and I hope this is helpful, or I hope this is something that you at least find worth thinking about. And I hope it doesn't sound like health class or an after-school special, but I will try to make sure that it doesn't. But I really have to say, just reflecting on my own personal experience in high school as a teenager, with so many damn strikes against you in so many ways, as far as intellectual development, emotional development, freedom of mobility, your ability to make personal choices, I really have to say that if I could go back and do it again, I would have kept my mind a lot cleaner and in a much more heightened state of alert and awareness. Because when we're kept in this captivity, when we're kept under such control, it leads to this feeling. Write me and tell me if you think I'm totally wrong, but I've seen it in the kids I've worked with, and I certainly saw it in myself. Leads to this feeling of nothingness. That we are these empty buckets that need to be filled by someone else. And on the whole poor decisions thing, a lot of bad things can wind up going into that bucket, besides what's happening at school. So, with very little guidance, even though I did have my own guidance counselor, and with very little, at least as far as I felt, very little understanding or empathy coming my way from adults, I set out to fill that bucket. And like I said, a lot of bad things go into it. My favorite thing to do in my later years of high school was to smoke pot. We got this stuff. It was brown. It came in bags. It was like $30. We smoked it after school and during school. And, you know, I often, as I thought back about the stuff, not even the stuff of like history class or English class that I sat there passively absorbing, but I just put myself in this sort of lazy mindset. Now, really, I don't think pot is that bad. Nothing that they're going to tell you about in health class is true, but I think that I used it as an escape, something just to get away. So while there was times and places where I could have been maturing emotionally, intellectually, learning more about myself, I was just baked. And I'm certainly not claiming that it's the kind of drug that turns you into a vegetable. And people do have a lot of eye-opening experiences with it. I think there was an author, Robert Anton Wilson, who described some aspects of it as like feeling like a one-eyed person in the kingdom of the blind. But that's not why I was smoking it when I was 16. I was smoking it because I wanted to get high. Or I guess I should probably say that that was the surface reason, the immediate reason why I was doing it. And in the school environment, like I was saying, to be in that passive state where you're only there to absorb a bunch of crap, I think it only makes you more susceptible to that. If your mind is not sharp, if you're not curious and inquisitive, because you can be, right? Even though school tries to suck it out of you, like you still can be when you're 16, sharp and inquisitive and curious about what's going on there. But if you're just kind of lazy and apathetic, and again, I'm not ripping on pot. I think that, you know, I have no problem with adults who smoke pot. But at that time in my life, it seemed like a hindrance. It seemed like something that held me back. I mean, drinking was the same thing. Now, when you're 16, we had to walk like 2 miles out in the woods to drink. Of course, because you're not ready to drink until you're 21, we had to trudge way out in the woods where no one who had experienced drinking could say, well, you know, you should slow down. You should mix that like this. That drink's going to be too strong. We were just on our own, 2 miles out at some giant rock in the middle of the woods in the dark with a fire. That's how we learned to drink. We taught each other. None of us were very good at it. And one of the things that we really all seemed to like to do together was to get into my friend Matthias's mother's minivan and go to the mall, getting high and listening to our favorite rappers at the time, who also smoked pot, not saying like a goddamn word to each other for 45 minutes. And as these relationships went on, I eventually found out that we were just using the word friend to basically describe other people your age that were in close proximity to you while you drank or smoked pot or listened to music. But we'd go to the mall listening to either Eazy-E or Dr. Dre. They were feuding at the time, so we were kind of back and forth on the whole thing. Dr. Dre's album was The Chronic, dissing Eazy-E, and then Eazy-E made an album dissing Dr. Dre. We were conflicted. But it was nice because these people were saying all of the things that we wanted to hear people say. Dr. Dre's album was Chronic, the kind of pot. It's supposed to be really good. I can't say I've ever smoked it. But Eazy-E was all about that too, and drinking 40s. These were role models for us. We had those deep holes that something needed to go into. And beer and pot and this music that told us that those things were okay, that those things were cool, that we didn't need to respect women, that money was the only thing that mattered, status, cars. And don't get me wrong, it's great to be successful and have nice things and, you know, have some financial security. But if all you're doing is like showcasing these external projections of value as a human being, what kind of message is that sending? Like, what else is there? It's everything is external. It's like the message was nothing else mattered. And I guess it was something like, look at all these things that are available that could make you feel whole. I mean, these guys looked happy, as far as we know. You know, I remember when I started working with kids, I was like 21 years old, and I would walk through the dorm of this residential school that I was working at, and the kids would be listening to these rappers like 50 Cent and DMX, just the most horrible, awful lyrics you could possibly imagine. And I would just be mystified by why they were attracted to this at 21. Now, I remember, like, flashback to the days of the Matthias's mom's minivan, and I understood it then. And when I would get into some kind of disagreement with my father about, you know, curfew or the kind of things I was doing, the music I was listening to, the people I was associating myself with, I used to say, you know, when I'm my dad's age, when I'm 40-something, I'm going to remember how to be cool. I'm still going to be connected to kids. But I started working with kids when I was 21, and I realized, wow, I'm already not cool. Because I didn't get why they were into this music that talked about just this awful, vicious objectification of women, this reckless use of drugs and alcohol. And years later, when I was teaching in another school, when I would talk to some of the boys in my class, and they would tell me that their favorite types of music were rap and country, which I thought was weird, because those are two very different types of music. Now, there's plenty of good rap. I'll admit that, right? And I like some hip-hop music, and country, well, maybe someday there'll be some good country. But you don't think, usually, typically, of people gravitating at the same time towards those two types of music. But it was really like every teenage boy that I encountered in the state of Vermont was crazy about rap and crazy about country and nothing else. And I couldn't figure this out. But when I started paying a little bit closer attention to the lyrics in these two types of music, I realized that there was a whole lot of overlap and not too much variety in the message that was being sent. The rap music was like, listen, kids, life is nothing but bitches and money. So what you need to do is go get a whole bunch of money by any means necessary. Before we were rappers, we had a lot of luck selling narcotics. When you get the money, you want to go and pick up like 3 or 4 high-end automobiles, you know, a Mercedes, a BMW, definitely some kind of SUV like a Range Rover. And even though these are like, you know, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 vehicles already, and they come very well equipped, you're going to need to make all kinds of weird modifications to them, like change the rims and stuff. When that's all set, you roll up to the club, go in, get a $400 or $500 bottle of champagne and give it to some bitches. Within a matter of no time at all, you'll be on the way back to your crib and you'll have the bitches in your hot tub. If you're really lucky, you'll even get to pour some of the champagne on them like your name was Jay-Z. And the country music was these idiots like Toby Keith, and every song was like, women are needy and they're also kind of dumb because they don't understand why me and my friends need to hang out and drink all this beer. And it was more, I mean, it was more complicated than that in both cases. But I'm just saying, as far as the message that I took away, that's pretty much what it was. Not too much difference. What I really now believe that me and these kids had in common was we just wanted to hear somebody make it sound like it was easy to be complete. They just wanted to hear somebody reinforcing what they wanted to do. What they wanted to do was fill the hole. So we fill the hole with things that are easy. It's easy to smoke pot. It's easy to get drunk. It's easy to mistreat and objectify teenage girls who are being subjected to the same kind of environment. And it's incredibly easy to project a false self. When we're these empty buckets that need to be filled, there's plenty of people lining up to take advantage of us. I have no problem with capitalism. I have no problem with profit. But in many ways, I feel that a lot of advertising has become predatory towards adolescence. Everything in advertising today is about kids. About getting kids to say, Mom, Dad, I need this. I have a hole. You need to fill it. I need this meaningless thing that I won't be interested in 3 weeks. But I need it now. And it extends beyond the substance abuse thing. It extends beyond music. It travels into our relationships. Now, that's got to be a topic for another time and probably coming soon. But so many romantic relationships start with that desire to fill that hole, to feel complete. And then once they commence, it's like back to school, back to the carrots and sticks, back to the Skinner box. Do this, get this. Where so much of what is being done for the other person is about the rewards that will be returned. I promise we'll come back to that. If I could go back and do it again, and I can't, and it's, you know, a silly thing to say, but for your sake, I would keep my mind clean. I would keep my mind sharp. I would try to be honest with myself about what was really needed to take care of those holes. And I have to tell you, I cannot answer all those questions. I mean, it starts with honesty, and then you follow that with a plan. But that's, I think, in a lot of ways up to, you know, the individual. I don't have all of the answers to those questions. I mean, I just, like I mentioned, read Stefan Molyneux's book, Real-Time Relationships, and now I'm working on some of Nathaniel Brandon's stuff. I couldn't write those books. But I think it was time to point some of these things out. You see, the path to freedom is a very personal thing. It's not about the Federal Reserve. It's not about the income tax. It's not about government school. Government school is a natural consequence, a natural development of a society that accepts coercion, that accepts manipulation, that accepts force to achieve certain ends. In that kind of society, sooner or later, the most violent organization winds up controlling the development and education of children. So we start somewhere else. We start by realizing what happened to us. But after we realize what happened to us, we have to decide what to do about it. Because, yeah, bad things happen to us. At home, at school, in society, in culture, in general, what's inflicted upon us. But when those things are done happening to us, the consequences of that are ours and ours alone to deal with. For me, Oh, man, it was a long and winding, difficult road. And I'm still on it.
And people are great at, you know, supporting each other and forming networks of support. But it really starts with the realization that somewhere along the way, some pretty deep holes might have been bored into our spirit, if you will, to use a religious word in a non-religious way.
Even though, after 1 year, I am very grateful for the success of School Sucks podcast, and I'm proud of the amount of people that we've reached, it has very much been a dialogue about problems that you need to be made aware of. And I trust, and I hope I'm right, and I really totally believe that I am right, that you will find the best solutions for yourself. Because yes, it would be great if our money wasn't run by this central banking system. It'd be great if we didn't have an income tax. It'd be great if the military was disbanded. It would be great if New Hampshire seceded. It would be wonderful if we could move into a voluntary society. But we really have to free ourselves first. Like I've said before, when I started doing this show a year ago, I certainly didn't have it all figured out and don't now. I make a lot of mistakes. But I needed to start. I felt like this was a too important of a topic not to be covering in great detail. But this freeing yourself, it's something that is getting easier and easier to start doing all of the time. And that takes me back to the beginning of the show, where I was really moved. I was inspired. I was motivated by the speech I read at the beginning of the show today.
This girl who was given every incentive
to conform, to fit in, for the satisfaction of teachers, parents, administrators, our valedictorian, our star student, could realize what is really going on. What really struck me about this whole thing was, look at the progress in 15 years. From the time that I was in high school, the time that I graduated from high school and even went to college, I was smart, but I was so confused. I had no idea what had happened to me.
We've had a pretty significant information revolution since I graduated from high school in the mid-90s.
For as far back as you want to go, governments and cultures have fought wars on information and wars on reality. Fortunately, when it's the government fighting the war on reality in the case with school, we usually wind up getting more of it. And even just 15 years ago, it would have been extremely difficult and almost impossible for me to find any of these things out that this girl knew. I never would have stumbled across in high school somebody like Jonathan Taylor Gatto.
So to hear somebody at the top of their class, this girl, get up and give this speech and say, today, based on things that I really learned on my own, I want to tell you about what we all really learn in school and what we don't. And even if somebody was able to pull that off 15 years ago, the only people who ever would have known about it were at the graduation. 15 people sent this to me, this speech. This is very exciting.
Right now, your mind, your spirit, is under siege. Day in and day out in this world of meaningless tasks backed up by these shallow justifications and rationalizations. We are these workers, slaves, as Erica said. Not understanding why we're doing nothing in it for us, even the rewards that are sort of thrown our way.
sometimes these things feel good on the surface, but deep down we kind of see these extrinsic motivators as the dog treats that they are. All so routine, all so subtle, and unfortunately, all so destructive to our person, to our passion, to our purpose.
And to defend against that with your natural gifts, with your individuality, with curiosity. I say this is a time to stay on your toes. So I hope this was helpful. I kind of envisioned it as a lot of the things I always wished I could have said to the kids that I was teaching, but because of the environment that we were in, it really prevented me from being able to be honest with them about, you know, my own regrets or my own experience. But I certainly would have told them, stay on your toes. Stay away from booze and pot if you can. Those things never did anything good for me, I promise. But looking back, I would have to say that I am lucky that I managed to stay away from the harder drugs, like crack and heroin and cocaine. And even those methamphetamines that they're just handing out like candy to kids in school. If those kids demonstrate they have difficulty sitting still in engaging places like their health class, take care.